In today's Founders Insights, I wanted to talk about the tricky puzzle today that is financing. Debt has been on the top of everyone's mind for at least a couple years now, going back all the way actually to early 2022 when the Fed started rising interest rates. And that was a big challenge for floating rate borrowers. And today is actually another really nasty day of treasury spikes. And so that's talking about fixed rates. When we talk about financing on a fixed rate, you've got either your 5-year treasury, 7-year treasury, or 10-year treasury as your index rate, which builds your all-in rate. When you're talking about a floating rate, you're talking about SOFR, which the Fed directly controls. So that's the difference between short rates and long rates, essentially, or floating rates and fixed rates. And like I said, today was another nasty spike in treasury rates, which affects fixed rate borrowers. We've seen treasuries over the last about month go up 70 basis points. And that is a really, really volatile swing, which the market really hasn't seen in a long time. And certainly, I don't think anyone in business that we work with today has seen that perhaps ever. So these are some really meaningful swings in treasuries, which makes it very difficult for buyers and sellers to come together and strike a deal. Because while cap rates aren't exactly correlated to interest rates, obviously real estate is an interest rate sensitive asset class. And when, as a buyer, when you're underwriting a potential acquisition, you're going to be plugging in the potential debt that you'll be using for that acquisition. And if you're a fixed rate borrower, that debt has been rapidly swinging and lately not in the right direction for us, not in the direction of the good guys. And that's making it difficult for buyers to make sense of the seller's price. And that's how buyers and sellers have a gap between themselves and they can't make a deal. Now, floating rate borrowers and floating rate buyers have not been meaningfully or at all impacted by the treasury volatility because they're floating rate borrowers. So their rate is based on SOFR, not a 5-year or 10-year treasury yield index, right? So floating rate borrowers can go along and underwrite deals and they don't have volatility, generally speaking, from, let's say, LOI, PSA to closing, or from term sheet to closing on their debt product if it's floating. So they can kind of go smooth sailing from LOI to closing, but of course, once they're closed, their rate remains floating. And so throughout their hold period, they remain exposed to interest rate risk. A fixed rate buyer has the opposite conundrum. When they sign up a deal at LOI and they strike an agreement with the seller, they work towards a contract, then sign the contract. And then throughout the contract period, they work towards actually locking that rate. And then they close the deal. And once the rate is locked and the deal is closed, they no longer have interest rate risk for the term of that loan. So it's the opposite. They're taking risk prior to locking the rate, prior to closing, whereas a floating rate buyer is taking risk really at closing and beyond. So the conundrum that we see in today's market is we've been having a preference towards fixed rates. And fixed rates have been a very great way for us to get deals done recently because of the inverted yield curve. SOFR today sits at 5.3%. And not too long ago, treasuries were in the low fours. And we actually locked a deal a couple months ago at an index rate of a 5-year treasury, I believe, in the high threes, like 3.6 even, which was nuts and looks really good in hindsight. So it just shows you the crazy volatility. Sometimes it goes in your direction, like it did on that deal. We were able to rate lock on a downtick. And then as soon as we rate locked, rates just started going up and up and up. And we were really happy to have done so. But on other deals, you are trying to work towards rate lock. And every week, as you get towards locking the rate just keeps going higher and higher. And that can have material impact to the way your deal underwrites and to your ability to close. Because as the interest rate goes up, the way that the loan sizes changes. And what I mean by sizes is the DSCR, the debt service coverage ratio. Now, debt service coverage ratios are so important when it comes to all forms of debt, fixed rate debt and floating rate debt. I think it's even more important than loan to value, which is a more common and perhaps even more popular lending constraint because it's so simple and easy, right? You're buying a $10 million deal. If you have a 70% LTV, that means your loan is $7 million. Now, that's one indication or measure of risk and exposure from a loan. But in my opinion, it really just does not tell the full story. What tells another part of the story, and I think an even more important part of the story, in my opinion, is that debt service coverage ratio, DSCR. And what DSCR is it's the NOI, the net operating income of the property, divided by the debt service of the property. And this shows the property's ability to pay the ongoing debt payment for that loan. So it really shows, in my opinion, the true debt burden of the loan, because you could have a high LTV or a low LTV, and the DSCR really tells the full story, because you could have a low LTV, like let's say 60% LTV, but if the DSCR is 1.25 or 1.2, in my opinion, that's not a safe loan. I mean, it's not necessarily that risky either, but it's not like, oh, I'm at 60% LTV, I'm super safe, right? If you're at 1.25 DSCR, you're like the rest of us, right? That's the minimum debt service coverage ratio that lenders usually require. And that's certainly true for the agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The reason why I'm focusing so much on the DSCR is not only because it's so important, but because also there's been some recent changes to it that have made fixed rates really valuable in recent times. But now, given the recent spike, this is starting to change. So, like I said, lenders actually size the loan based on a DSCR, usually a minimum 1.25. That means that the NOI of the property has to be 125% of the debt service of the property. And that's usually, 9 times out of 10, or technically it should be, the principal and interest payment of that mortgage. And that will determine what loan amount the property can handle. Well, as interest rates rise, that impacts your DSCR calculation, because your debt service goes up. And so now you need more NOI to handle the same amount of debt load because the debt service is higher. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that your NOI goes up, because you can't change NOI. It means that the loan amount has to come down to accommodate that NOI to still meet that 1.25 DSCR. So when you're talking about agency leverage, you're most of the time constrained to that 1.25 DSCR. And with cap rates where they are and where interest rates where they've been, it's been very difficult to get attractive leverage of, let's say, above 50% even on agency loans. And that's, of course, because of this DSCR. And to solve for this, we've been focusing on fixed rates, which have been lower actually than floating rates. That's been a weird dynamic in the market for quite some time. And that's, of course, because SOFR is up here at 5.3%, whereas treasuries have been around 4%. But today, as we record this, treasuries are at around 4.6%. Now they're starting to creep up and be closer to where SOFR is today. The big meaningful change that I wanted to talk about as far as DSCR and lender underwriting is, a few years ago, the agencies used to size a floating rate loan to the fixed rate equivalent interest rate. So if you were looking at a floating rate loan today, let's say that would be a SOFR 5.3%, and let's say a lender spread of 2%. That would be a 7.3% all-in starting rate for your floating rate loan. And if you had to size to a DSCR based on 7.3%, your leverage point would be hurt by that. How, as compared to, let's say, a fixed rate loan today of 6.25, right? You're going to size a lot better on a DSCR basis. You're going to qualify for more loan dollars on the fixed rate scenario. And like I said, a few years ago, you could actually size that floater to the fixed rate equivalent of 6.25, and you would get more leverage. The agencies did away with that, and it actually makes sense, because if you were able to get a loan based on a fixed rate equivalent that's lower than your starting rate, that means day one when you close the property, you're not only going to have to deal with takeover and transitioning the asset, you're also going to be behind the eight ball when it comes to your DSCR, because you size to a 6.25 rate, but your actual pay rate is 7.3, and that's going to be real tough to have a feel good about your cushion there. So I think that's actually fairly smart that the agencies have changed their sizing requirements. But what that means today is it's just super hard to get attractive leverage on a floating rate loan, because you're penalized by that starting rate. Now, everyone in the market knows that it's only a matter of when, not if, the Fed starts lowering rates, and that's going to bring SOFR down. So even if you start with a floating rate that's 7.3%, it's going to most likely float its way down and hopefully turn into an all-in reasonably attractive or competitive interest rate cost over the course of your hold period, as compared to if you were to lock in a fixed rate. And actually right now, like I've said, we have a very deeply inverted yield curve, and we've had one for the longest time in history. And history shows that locking in a fixed rate while the yield curve is inverted is usually a bad bet, because when the yield curve is inverted, it usually means that floating rates are about to come crashing down. I'm not saying rates are going to come crashing down on the short end of the curve, but that's just what history also says. So all this brings me to my final point, which is about bridge loans. right? That's kind of the third option here. You've got fixed rates, you've got floating rates, and I'm talking about agency mostly in the multifamily space, but also you have bridge loans, which size based on different constraints and allow for more flexibility. The downside is, of course, they're a lot more expensive. So when you're talking about trying to fix this and solve this puzzle, right? You can go with fixed rates, they'll size better, but then you're locked into the fixed rate, and today fixed rates aren't that attractive. Not at all, really. And then floaters, you can get the flexibility, but it will size very poorly because of that starting rate. So bridge loans are different, right? Because bridge loans don't size based on DSCR, and they don't size based on in-place performance of the property. A bridge lender is able to provide you more loan proceeds based on your business plan and the future income of the property. So this fixes your proceeds problem, right? With a bridge lender, you don't have proceeds problem, and you don't have a flexibility problem because you can, that's what a bridge loan is for. It's to get in and out of deals. It's a transitional product. So what you do have a problem with is, of course, the cost. And bridge loans are so expensive today relative to other products, considering the inversion of the yield curve. Basically, to keep it real simple, a bridge loan from a spread perspective is about 200 basis points higher than a floating rate agency loan. So if you're talking about today, SOFR at 5.3%, your floater, your Freddie floater, for example, could be 7.3%. And then instead of being SOFR plus 200, it's, let's say, SOFR plus 400. Now you're talking 9.3% as your starting rate for your bridge loan. That is super expensive. And even if you know that rate's gonna come down eventually, the Fed's gonna lower rates, it's really tough to stomach that cost. And as the Fed does lower rates, it's not like it's gonna go to zero, right? So a bridge loan really is expensive. And what that means is you have to find a deal that justifies the added cost of the bridge loan if you're gonna wanna go that direction. And obviously most deals out there do not fit that description. There hasn't been really any distress in multifamily up to this point. So there's not like these very, very juicy deals that pencil based on buying a bridge loan. That's the big challenge in the market. One way to quasi solve the challenge is using a interest rate cap to buy down the rate of the bridge loan. And what you're doing is you're creating a synthetic fixed rate bridge loan. However, of course, we all know that interest rate caps are not free, right? You're gonna have to pay a very big cost upfront for that interest rate cap. And you're gonna perhaps buy a 2-year or 3-year cap that locks you in, but that's only for 2 to 3 years, right? You're gonna have interest rate risk on the back end of that problem. So really, there's no easy way to get deals done today, but I don't think there's really ever a time in history to get deals done easily. When deals looked easy to do and financing was readily available, well, it was very competitive. And you know, there's a lot of competition for equity or for deals and things like that. So in any market, it's always tough to get deals done. And so we just continue to navigate and adapt to the environment that we're in. And we try our best not to go around with a hammer in our hand, looking at everything like it's a nail, right? We want to look at deals on a one-off basis and understand, okay, how can we approach this deal and create the most value for our investors rather than just what serves us and what's the simplest recipe for us to just copy and paste a bunch of deals out, right? We really want to be thoughtful with how we're buying deals. So thanks for watching. Please share this with a friend if you found value. And if you'd like to learn more about investing with us at Lone Star Capital, please reach out to us today.